Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to what should have been our AEW NXT report. Of course, this week, due to the fact that Christmas fell on Wednesday, there really was no new AEW nor NXT show, although NXT did air some unaired matches that we can discuss. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. For the next hour, we will be discussing some very interesting things in the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, both AEW and NXT decided, rightfully so, that they weren't going to make people work on Christmas, and they were going to air, either not air or air some matches that were previously taped. Now, NXT put on a very good show, I think. Yes, they were matches that probably weren't what you would call high-profile matches. Some of them included some newcomers and things like that, but it was still a very good show. But the big news coming out of the world of professional wrestling this week is that we have a brand new United States champion crowned in Madison Square Garden at a house show. Now, this is not necessarily that unusual. AJ Styles won a U.S. championship at a house show. But it is unique because, in a sense, because of who won it. Rey Mysterio versus Andrade Cien Almas, and Andrade is your new U.S. champion. And this is a little bit mind-boggling to me because they really had him on a storyline that was certainly appearing to be a rift between himself and Zelina Vega due to the fact that Andrade couldn't win. It seemed like Andrade was going through a losing spell. Zelina was somewhat contributing to that with missteps and interferences and things. And it looked as though there was going to be a parting of the ways. And I'm not sure if that's all off the table now or not. I have no idea what the motivation was behind this. Now, Ray's not hurt, so it wasn't just getting the belt off Ray. And Ray, in fact, is involved really in a feud with Seth Rollins and the AOP. So my only thought is, because they are going to be doing a lot of this Samoa Joe, Kevin Owens, Rey Mysterio team-ups, they did not want to tie up the U.S. belt. That's the only thing I can possibly think of, the only reason I can think of why you would hand Andrade over the belt at a house show. It's very interesting. But if you were going to hand over the belt, it does seem kind of interesting it would be to Andrade, unless perhaps, and I hope this isn't the case, unless perhaps he is a transitional champion and they have plans to hand it over to someone else very, very, very soon. As in, you know, this week's episode. Because perhaps the person they want to have it is going to be a face, and they didn't want him to face Rey Mysterio. In other words, maybe Humberto gets it. Maybe, you know, someone else that they just didn't want Rey Mysterio to face. Ricochet, who knows? Who knows? But I thought this was a very interesting turn of events because nothing in the past month would ever lead anyone to indicate that Andrade was about to win a belt. He was definitely losing his feud with Humberto Carrillo. He was involved again in that storyline that seemed to be heading toward a split with Zelina Vega. And it certainly did not appear like he was one of those people who was going to be pushed. And Rey, being very high profile and in a major feud, I thought for sure we were going to perhaps see that belt change hands with Seth Rollins, perhaps getting a hold of that belt. And then Samoa Joe and perhaps even Kevin Owens vying for it. So this was a very, very interesting turn of events, Mike. It's not necessarily unique that the U.S. belt changed hands at a house show, but it's rare.
It's rare, and like you said, it's the person. I mean, look, I wouldn't have been at all adverse to having somebody like Humberto or somebody like that to change the belt, but like you said, plus, you got to factor into the fact, you know, that there's a possibility that both Andrade and his girlfriend, who we know is his girlfriend, Charlotte, may not be on the best of terms with the WWE in terms of him telling other wrestlers not to come there, and of course Charlotte, you know, doing what she did with her names and all that stuff, and you know, and that poor match that she put on with those two ladies and all that stuff. So, I mean, yeah, it's surprising that. And look, I've said it before. If you want that thing to work out, now, granted, this may be a transitional championship, but if you really wanted that thing with her managing him to work out, he has to win, and he has to win big. And this is somewhat him winning big, but like you said, it's surprising. It's a surprising win.
It is, just due to the fact that the storyline seemed to be he was on a losing streak and she was a good portion of the reason why. And all of a sudden it's, no, he's the champion. So I would think in theory, if he's the champion, all should be well. Unless they're going to do a gimmick where she causes him to lose that belt. Now, I've been thinking for a few weeks that there is this possibility that Zelina Vega is going to pull off a double switch and we are going to see Humberto Carrillo turn heel and go with Zelina Vega, and it will be Andrade who is actually the face. This could potentially happen. It wouldn't be that hard. She's been seen coming out for Humberto almost like she's setting him up, but maybe she isn't. Maybe Humberto and her are really setting up Andrade, and they get to the point where, okay, Andrade has the belt, and then Zelina Vega accidentally on purpose causes Andrade to lose that belt to Humberto, and then we find out it was no accident at all. Now, I'd be all for that because, as I said before, I don't look at Humberto Carrillo and think face. I just don't. And I know it's very difficult for some people who say, what are you talking about? He looks like a little kid. He has that boyish face. Yeah, I know. But he looks like a punk. He looks like somebody you just want to slap. And the whole Power Ranger outfit and the whole thing, it bothers me. The whole thing screams heel to me. And I'd rather, he reminds me more of a, what's the right word for it? More of like an egotistical heel than he does a underdog baby face. That's all. And I'd much rather see him that, because in my opinion, I think he'd be better off. So Todd, I mean, this is kind of interesting. You go to MSG, you don't expect to see necessarily any title changes, and bingo, a title change.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Gil. Like you said, it's very rare you see any title change at a MSG house show. Last time was who won the U.S. belt was AJ Styles at a house show. I forgot where, but either way, it's very rare you see a title change hands at a house show. And you're absolutely right, like with Humberto Carrillo and Andrade, you might see a double turn down the road.
I'm hoping you do, because I think that would be best for both people. We have a problem here where Andrade doesn't really speak great English. And so he's going to have to do a lot of his, selling of matches through either a manager as a heel, which hurts, or he's got to be the face who doesn't really have to say a lot. It's the other people who say things. Humberto seems to be fine with English, so I would go that route. I just think that this screams transitional champion. I don't see Andrade as being a even semi-long-term champion. This feels to me as though they're saying, look, Ray's going to be involved with the AOP and Seth and all of these things with Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens. So get the belt off him so we can get some title defenses from somebody. Give it to Andrade, and then we'll take it off Andrade and give it to somebody we really want to have it. And maybe down the road it'll go to someone else. Who knows? But I got this feeling that they're not doing this Humberto Carrillo-Andrade thing for no reason. They fought each other how many times? And Zelina Vega comes out watching Humberto's match before Andrade comes out. There's a lot of things going on there. Too much to just ignore and say, oh, now they're just going to go their separate ways and he's going to fight other people. I don't think so. I got a feeling Humberto Carrillo is possibly going to take that belt. But if he does, it should 100% be with a double switch where Zelina Vega absolutely turns on Andrade and goes with Humberto Carrillo, and you have a Carlito-like heel in Humberto with Zelina Vega, and you have a more stoic, I don't want to say Eddie Guerrero-esque, because Eddie Guerrero was so good on the mic, and Andrade's not going to be. But I think if you want a Latino hero for the Latino community especially, I don't think it's Humberto. I just don't. It would seem to me it would be more Andrade. He would seem to represent better, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, you got Ray, and they took it off Ray. But I think the reason they took it off Ray is because his long-term plans. So I don't know. I don't know if this is going to be a transitional champion. I don't know if he's going to hold it a while. My guess is he's not going to hold it very long at all. My guess is they took it off Ray quickly and said, let's get to the next guy. So maybe a week or two, a month tops, to the next pay-per-view, maybe the Royal Rumble, whatever. But I got a feeling that that storyline is going to play itself out. Now, as far as the NXT, we saw some taped matches. We saw Keith Lee and Leo Rush team up. That was fun. We saw a title defense by Roderick Strong. It was actually pretty good. But everybody kind of took a break this week, which is understandable. But I do want to make people aware of this. AEW lost big the week before Christmas. Big. And NXT did put on a decent show. They had something there for the fans. And I just wonder if the bounce back week, which will be next week, is New Year's Day, and both AEW and NXT are going to present live shows. I'm very interested to see. I'm very interested to see what the ratings will be, because this is going to be critical. I mean, this is evaluation time for AEW and its ownership. Because if the week of being decimated and then the week off leads to another week of being decimated by 100,000 views or more, you got a problem. You got a legit problem. And what's happening, I think, and I'm sure there are AEW fans listening to me out here who will totally disagree, but try very hard to just strip away any partisanship you would have. If I'm looking at AEW and I'm looking at NXT and I'm looking just in terms of big name, larger than life feeling stars, I'm still thinking, NXT has an advantage. Because when you watch these guys, they seem a little more larger than life than some of the AEW guys, minus Chris Jericho and Moxley and a few others who understand that philosophy. So they're going to have to pick that pace up. They're going to have to really, you know, come hard now. I think they thought we can coast. NXT's no challenge. We're the hot hand. We're the new kids in town. We can do our own thing. They said on many occasions, and to their credit, we're not trying to compete with them. We're just trying to do our own thing. The problem is, if you're doing your own thing and you're reaching a progressively smaller audience, your own thing isn't working. And you don't want another show stealing your thunder. So that's going to be very important to see what happens next week. Next week's ratings are extremely important to AEW. It's not even that important to NXT, because if it's close or they lose by a little bit, so what? They've proven they can win. They've proven they have the roster to compete. So it is what it is. It is more critical to AEW that they bounce back. Now, in terms of what the WWE is looking to do, there has been some rumors that Killer Cross, who was released from Impact, is very close to signing a contract with the WWE. And that contract, surprisingly enough, would have him go directly to the main roster. No NXT. That's what I'm hearing. So if he signs, and that would be a pretty lucrative deal, he's coming directly up to the main roster. I don't know if he's not coming as Killer Cross. I don't know what they'll call him or what they'll do with him. But that's what I'm hearing. And the WWE has not really been resting on their laurels. They've been out there attempting to sign everyone who's a free agent, attempting to take away any possibilities of AEW getting those more high-profile signings, because they understand what I'm saying is the truth. It's very easy for people to say, well, the WWE is just being greedy. They're just snatching up everybody. They don't care. But in reality, they understand that if someone who has a personality that could lead to a more high-profile, larger-than-life feel becomes available, you're going to have to grab them. Because you can let all the indie-style guys you want go to AEW. It's not going to help them. It's really not. I can name you 6, 8, 10, 12 indie guys. Big-name indie guys that if they go to AEW, it's going to get like the indie scene is going to say, wow, that guy's really good in the ring, but he's not going to draw. He's not going to be a box office draw. He's just going to be another really good worker in a federation filled with really, really good workers. At this point, AEW doesn't need that. AEW doesn't even need a good worker. They need a name. I don't care if he can work. They need a name. They need someone who the fans are going to say, oh, I got to tune in to see that. Because you've got enough good workers. You got a roster full of good workers. So when the WWE sees someone on the horizon that might do that, they snatch them up. It's kind of suffocating the AEW, so they can't get that big name. Now, could they offer him all the money in the world? They could. But apparently Tony Khan has put the brakes on that, saying, look, we've put some big money out here and we're not getting the results I wanted. I'm going to have to think about this before we start throwing huge figures at people again. So that doesn't bode well either. This almost reminds me of the WCW thing. When Eric Bischoff had somebody else's pocketbook, he was buying up everybody. And he was paying money for them that Vince McMahon himself said there's no way you can turn a profit and pay these guys this much money. No one in the world is going to offer these guys this much money, because there's no way at the end of the day you're going to make anything from it. Vince was right. And what happened? WCW was hemorrhaging money. Well, Tony Khan is smarter than Ted Turner in relation to that. And Tony Khan's put the brakes on and said, no, we're not going to be hemorrhaging money. And I warned everybody about that. I said, he's going to run this like a business. Don't think this is open pocketbook. We'll do what we want. It's Christmas Day. Everybody just come over here. Come by. You all get, $10 million for you, $10 million for you, $10 million for you. It's not going to work that way. Because as soon as he sees, wait a minute, there's no return on my investment, he's going to be like, hold the brakes. I'm a businessman. I want some return on my investment. Remember when somebody called this show and said money's not important? Ratings aren't important. They don't care. That's not the primary reason that they exist. They're not here to get big ratings and make money. And I said, are you kidding? If you think Tony Khan just said, I'm such a huge wrestling fan, I am more than willing to hemorrhage tens of millions of dollars to have my own federation and to please a small group of fans, then you have a screw loose. He's a businessman. He's willing to lay out a substantial investment, but at some point he wants to see profit. At some point he wants to see return on the investment. And if he's seeing sagging ratings and lackluster drawing power from people he gave huge money to, he's pumping the brakes. And that's exactly what he did. So I don't know. I mean, this is going to be a very interesting time for AEW, Mike. The transitional period is sort of over, and now they've got to really do this on a regular basis, as we said before they even started.
Right. It is over. And look, you're right about them needing to sign some big-time guys. And look, we talked about Ryback before, and we talked about that tweet, which was probably an older tweet, but if I'm them, that's the exact type of guy that they would need, that Tony Khan would probably open up the checkbook to get, would be a Ryback, you know? You know, it's not going to be one of these Mr. X, Y, or Z from, you know, whatever. Maybe you could probably get away with signing somebody from ROH, you know, Ring of Honor. But again, that's more of an indie group. So so anyway, you know, you got that going on. But like I said, those type of guys, a Ryback type of guy is a guy that he would open up the checkbook for, probably.
Yeah, he is the type of guy I'm talking about. But, I mean, look, the minute these guys come forward, Morrison, WWE snatches him right up. Whoever seems to have that ability to say, oh, well, maybe this guy could potentially be a draw, the WWE says, oh, no, we're snatching him. Now, I know there's some people telling me, well, if Luke Harper goes, look, Luke Harper is a fantastic wrestler. And Luke Harper has a great mannerism about him and a great look. But I don't think Luke Harper is a draw. With the Wyatts, he was a draw. On his own, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure. Because he'd go and he'd do a different style of wrestling, wouldn't he? He'd go and he'd be a different – he wouldn't be that character. There'd be differences. And I just don't think Luke Harper is going to be one of these people. Yeah, he's a name that people say, I know who that guy is. But much like Jake Hager, Jack Swagger wasn't drawn big when he left. And Luke Harper wasn't drawn. It isn't drawn when he left. And the Revival's not drawn when they leave. You need somebody who's going to draw. You need somebody who people are going to say, oh, they signed so-and-so, that's big. You need a huge name. Who that huge name is, they're not really available right now. WWE signed them all up. Kevin Owens would have been huge. Randy Orton would have been huge. Obviously, someone like a Seth Rollins or a Roman Reigns, that would be huge. They're not going anywhere. All these guys are signed. Signed, sealed, and delivered. So you're very limited now. And the guys with the personality and the drawing power are less abundant than just really good workers. And AEW has always had that philosophy of, we'll take good workers over, you know, personality guys. Well, okay. And you have, and you've got a whole great big roster filled with good workers and just a few personality guys. And you're seeing what's happening in the ratings, which I warned everybody ahead of time was going to happen. We need to see AEW. At this point, Tony Khan has to realize if he's a big wrestling fan, I mean, everybody's telling me he's the biggest wrestling fan. Well, then he must know. He must know, look, we need to get a guy who's a draw. I don't care who he is. I don't care if he's 10 years past his prime. I don't care if he don't know a wrist lock from a wristwatch. I want a guy who puts asses in seats and has a personality and can get on that microphone and cause some chaos and cause some fans to sit up and take notice. I don't care who it is. Find me that guy. You're going to have to do that. You're going to have to do that. You see, what WCW did was very different. WCW walked over and they got Lex Luger. They got Kevin Nash. They got Scott Hall. They got people who the audiences were saying, oh, my God. These are huge, huge names and big, big, giant stars. And they still couldn't do it. They still couldn't do it. And these were draws. There's no question that at the time, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, they were draws. They got Bret Hart. Bret Hart was a huge draw. But at the end of the day, the WWE has that one thing that I thought AEW would lack, and they do lack, and that is the WWE has an odd way of knowing exactly how to use some guy, even if they never win a match, that makes them feel like they're not like you and I, like they're a star. Even if they're not particularly a big name, they still somehow feel like they're a star. And AEW has that ability to take a star and make them feel like just one more guy on the roster. And that's exactly what you don't want. It's exactly what you don't want. So it'll be very interesting to see if in the coming year, if Tony Khan is going to pump the brakes and say, we're going to hold pat until somebody really comes along we need, or if he's going to say, look, I know I have pumped the brakes a little bit, but I'm fully aware we need some names. So let's go out and find those names, but I don't know where they're coming from. I don't know where they're coming from. But just think about it. Is anything in the Dark Order even close to as star-powered as Bray Wyatt? No. No, not at all. The hottest-selling wrestling merchandise this year come from Bray Wyatt at the end of the year with this Fiend stuff. WWE Shop Zone's running out of Fiend t-shirts, Fiend mugs, Fiend this, Fiend that. They paid Bray Wyatt's salary three times over on just what the hell they've sold. And that's not an accident. That's because Bray Wyatt is a very good character wrestler. He is no, you know, he's not Kenny Omega. Nobody is going to sit here and say, Bray Wyatt is a better wrestler than Kenny Omega when it comes to actual in-the-ring wrestling. No one's going to say that. If you do, you're an idiot. But what they are going to say, and I'm going to say, and I mean it, is if I had a spot in the Federation and you said, do you want Kenny Omega or Bray Wyatt? I'll take Bray Wyatt. And it doesn't take me 5 seconds to make that decision. Because one's going to draw like a you-know-what. One's going to sell merchandise like you-know-what. And put on a decent match. The other one's going to draw a little, put on a great match, and sell a decent amount of merchandise. But the possibilities are endless with Bray Wyatt. The possibilities are endless with some of these other WWE guys. Yes, there's a few guys on that roster in the WWE I don't think have great potential when it comes to what I would be called a personality wrestler. I think Ricochet's having trouble. I think unless Humberto turns heel, he's going to have trouble. Look what happened to Ty Dillinger. He couldn't fit through because he couldn't reach that without that. They tried to give him that catchphrase and the whole nine yards, and it just wasn't translating. Look what happened to Bo Dallas. Bo Dallas was one of the hottest things in NXT. It didn't work in the WWE. The whole Bo Leave thing didn't work. It wasn't drawn. It wasn't getting over. There was no, and they didn't, flesh it out. it doesn't work for everybody. So I don't know, Todd. I think if I'm AEW, I'm scouring the universe looking for some guy that has a big name, whether he can wrestle or not, that can put some butts in seats.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's with AEW and then with Tony Khan trying to look big names to sign. And if he's doing that, it's not a good move right there.
Ryback, I think, would be – I don't think he's a good fit in AEW. But I think he's exactly what we're talking about, Mike. And if you want to throw a decent amount of money at him to just – here's the problem. They got to walk this tightrope because some of the AEW's base is going to say, this is exactly what we don't want. We don't want guys like Ryback who ain't really a great wrestler. That's not what you said you were going to present. You said you were going to present the top quality wrestling. We want, you know – Kenny Omega and the New Japan style stuff and that all that stuff. And they're not going to like Ryback. They're not going to like that. But every federation has to have some of those in order to draw.
Right. And that's the thing. And look, you're talking about guy draws. I mean, even the guys who you wouldn't think are drawn in would be drawn in the WWE are drawn, you know. You know, I gave you a good example, Otis. Otis would be huge as a singles guy because he's got an odd charisma about him that people just love him. If they would decide to pull the trigger on them splitting up, I think Otis would be big because he's got that yes, you know.
Right.
You know, that's Otis. That's the type of guy they need now. He's not quite the big name yet, but he could be, you know.
He definitely
you know,
could be.
They kind of got that with MJF. MJF is showing that he's going to develop into that, you know. They've got a couple of guys there that can develop into that, but they need one that's that right now.
Exactly. They need one to show the way because there's a couple that give them a year. And they could potentially be a draw. But right now, they're not helping those ratings that much. Let me give you a perfect example of what I'm talking about, because I know some wrestling fans are probably confused. When is the last time you saw Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins win a match? When is the last time they were the top billed people in the WWE? And yet, I can find a lot of fans who, if Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins is on a card, say, oh, I like those guys because I watch their podcast show and I'm into that. And so in some way, they're still stars with wrestling fans. Even if they're not winning, it transcends that. Almost like Austin Creed does with his up, up, down, down, where even if the New Day wasn't in a big spot, he's still going to be big with the wrestling crowd. And yes, I know they have being the elite. I know. But it's not the same thing. These guys are branching out they're not creating a TV show. They're not saying we're also doing the New Day being the New Day. And we're being Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins being Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins. No. They're branching out saying, look, we're interested in action figure collecting, so we're doing a whole bunch of action figure collecting videos, and people watch them. And then when they come to a local town, they say, oh, Ryder and Hawkins, I like Ryder and Hawkins because I watch their other stuff. It's unique how the WWE, some of the lowest guys down the totem pole in WWE, would still draw big to an autograph signing session where some of the guys who are in the middle of AEW probably wouldn't. And that's what I'm trying to say. That's what they need. I don't know if Ryback's the solution. He's certainly a name. If he's handled right, but are you going to really have Ryback come in there and go on a tear like a Goldberg where he's beating guys in 2 minutes with almost no offense? And what's all these guys going to say in AEW when you said, well, we're treating all the wrestlers equally and we're focusing more on in-ring talent than anything else. They're going to say, well, you lied to us because Ryback's in here destroying guys who are better than him in the ring. And that's wrestling as normal. I don't understand how this got started anyway. Because Cody Rhodes grew up in this business thanks to Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes was not a great athlete. He was a brilliant in-ring performer. He could draw money from dust. Okay? You could go into an impoverished town and they're going to find the money to come see Dusty Rhodes. And that's no bull. You could go into a territory that wasn't drawing flies, with seats covered with honey. And if Dusty Rhodes showed up, they're going to fill the seats. Why? Because he was a flippy, floppy, Kenny Omega-style wrestler who everyone respected as a finely honed athlete? No! Because he had personality, because he could reach out to those fans, and those fans, to those fans, he meant something. Big. Dusty Rhodes is in town. Got to go see Dusty Rhodes. We got to go root for Dusty. That's why. And it hasn't changed. I know there are a certain segment of the wrestling fans who say, but we want that changed. We want it to be based now strictly on athleticism. It will not work. Read my lips. It will not work. Because after a certain length of time, you've seen all the moves. You've seen all the great matchups. And now you're just sitting there saying, well, this is a rehash of what they did before. And yeah, sometimes he wins. I don't really care. I just like to see the moves. It won't work. Watch some of the Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair feuds. There are people in the audience ready to kill Ric Flair. Because that's how much Dusty Rhodes meant to them. Got to have a few of them guys. Got to have them. I'm arguably saying you got two. You got Chris Jericho and you got Moxley. And Moxley could go the other way real quick. Because Moxley has this weird thing about him that he gets old after a while. He got old as Dean Ambrose after a while. Where you're just like, eh, I've seen this act already. I know. You're a big, tough guy. I get it. You're a hardcore badass. I get it. Jericho reinvents himself constantly. Jericho never gets old. Jericho's like the New Day. Every time you say, I think I've had enough of Jericho, he comes up with something else, and you're like, well, now I like it again. Because he's brilliant at that. Not everybody is Chris Jericho. Not everybody is the New Day. But the more people you have like that in your federation, the better you're going to draw. And right now, arguably, Mike, AEW doesn't have a lot.
Right. And here's something else to think about. Even at the end, when he was in, when Dustin was in WWE, even at the end, he, as Goldust, he was still a draw.
Yep.
At 55 years old, he was a draw. You know?
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. If they can get a guy like that, now, granted, Dustin's 55 years old, and he's probably a little bit past his prime, but again, he's a guy that could be a draw even at this late in age.
Well, I mean, they got him. You know, he's there. He don't wrestle much, but he's there. And he's helping some of the younger talent, and, you know, I thought that was a good move. He stays out of the ring on a regular basis. He comes in now and then, but he also helps with interviews and you know, using the mic. And I thought he was going to be helping these guys to find their personality. The problem is, and I know I'm going to piss people off by saying this, I'll tell you, sometimes my mouth engages and I piss people off because I refuse to have a filter. But the problem is, some of these guys think, my personality is I'm a great, great wrestler. That is my personality. I'm a great, great wrestler. Well, that's not enough. Because guess what? A lot of people are great, great wrestlers. I go to indie shows. I see guys all the time that I'm like, that guy's a great wrestler. As far as physical athleticism, that guy's fantastic. easily as good as the Young Bucks, easily as good as Kenny Omega, easily as good as all these other people. But then here's the weakness. They don't look so professional, maybe. They don't have a great, unique look. Their mic work is subpar, if not worse. And you say, they got all the athletic skills in the world, but they're not going to draw because they don't have that thing that makes fans sit up and take notice other than they're a good wrestler. When I saw Keith Lee, I saw a man that was 300-some-odd pounds doing planches over the top rope and head scissor flips and everything else, and I'm saying, that's goddamn impressive. But I'm still not sold until I saw how he could work that crowd. I saw how he could make that crowd pop. I saw how that crowd stood up and took notice, and I said, no, he's got it. He's got that extra feature there. He's got that charisma. That guy is going to be big because he can do that with the crowd. Eddie Guerrero is a great wrestler. Eddie Guerrero spent many, many years not being a household name. When did Eddie Guerrero become a household name? When he started doing the lie, cheat, and steal, when he started doing all of those great promos, when he started using all those great facial expressions and all the funny stuff that he did and even all the serious stuff that he did, and people sat up and took notice and said, I like this Eddie Guerrero. He's fantastic. And then the in-ring is the cake, okay? If you're great in the ring, that's the cake. But who eats cake without icing? Not too many people. The icing is the personality that you care about one way or the other. And right now I see a whole federation over there with mostly cake and not a lot of icing. Now you can have the reverse. You can have the icing and no cake where you say, well, there's a lot of guys in this federation that has a lot of personality, but they don't put on very good matches. And after a while, fans are going to say, well, Jesus, all these matches suck, though. They can never deliver. So you need a little combination of both. Andretti would be a perfect example. Andretti is mostly cake. He doesn't have a grasp of the English language enough to be that person that he probably could be. And that's going to hold him back, obviously. Well, you figure a guy like Enzo was mostly icing. He could talk a great fight. He could do any gimmick you want him to do. He could go out there and work that crowd and get that crowd crazy. He's not going to put on a 5-star match with anybody. So there's your two differences right there. However, I could argue that if I had an Enzo versus Andretti match, and I could get Enzo over big as the crowd favorite, it would light up Andretti too. So that's what I think AEW has to do. So if you get a guy like Ryback, yeah, I mean, if he's just going to run roughshod until he gets to I don't know who, I guess it'll work to a certain extent, but is anybody interested in a Hangman Page Ryback match? Raise your hand. Probably not. Hangman Page, Kenny Omega match? Probably not. Because what's going to happen is Ryback's lack of skill is going to hold back Kenny Omega's flash. That's a problem. That's why you have to have more than a couple. So those guys can sort of fight each other, and you're like, it's all good. Otherwise, you're wasting your time. There's no point in Ricochet fighting a guy like a Luke Harper or Eric Rowan, because what's really going to happen? The high-flying moves isn't going to work with him, and they're not going to be able to – they can't hang stamina-wise with him, and he's going to have to sell their – it's just not going to be a great match for Ricochet, whereas like Ricochet and Umberto would be a great match. Ricochet and Andretti be a great match. Ricochet and AJ Styles be a great match. There's a lot of guys in that division you can match people up with and say, yes, this will be a great match. and you can avoid matching him up with those other type of guys that won't be. AEW doesn't necessarily have that luxury, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, AEW don't have that type of luxury like WWE has with guys and signing things like that. And like you said, they needed to get that luxury soon, not too soon.
I would sign Enzo. I would try hard to sign Enzo and just tell him, you're not going to be in the ring a lot. Maybe you're going to come in as a manager originally. But we need somebody to really use that stick. But I can tell you this. If you brought Enzo in and MJF and you worked a program between Enzo and MJF, you're not going to tell me that's not going to draw, Mike.
That's not a draw. And look, I'd even bring in Cass as well, because you could have him manage Cass. And Jake Hager match wouldn't be bad. And, you know, to your point, you've got a thing that's going on right now with in the WWE with R-Truth and Tozawa. Tozawa, he doesn't grasp the English language very well, but he can sell a match with his facial expression. He's good in the ring and his facial expression. And, of course, we know how good R-Truth is on the mic. He's decent in the ring, but he's great on the mic. All right? So you got – and as evidenced by how the fans respond to him, yeah, they got them going in this dopey 24/7 thing. But I would love to see a series of matches between those two guys. Good matches between those two guys.
There are some things that can be done. My point is we have to wait and see what AEW is going to do. Are they going to pull the trigger on this, or are they going to stay fast? If you're going to stay fast, then you're going to understand that you are going to be a strong indie, because your mindset is indie. And indie is going to draw a certain amount of people. It's almost like music. If Metallica had continued to do Master of Puppets, Ride the Lightning type music, they're going to reach a certain amount of people and no more, because that audience isn't going to expand. Radio's not going to open up for you. You're going to stay right exactly where you are with the fan base that you have, and they're going to be very, very happy. But they're not going to be huge. But when you started doing Enter Sandman, and you started to do Turn the Page, and you started to do a lot of these other songs, and you became a little bit of a different band that had more commercial appeal, you reached out to a wider audience. Now, yes, some of your hardcore fans said that's bullshit and left you behind. But for every one or two fans that dropped off the bandwagon and said, you sold out, here comes 45, 50, 60 fans who say, I like this better. And then the decision becomes, do you die on your sword for your art, or do you attempt to appease more people? Now, this is a very, very tough argument, because I've heard artists, of which I'm one, I've heard artists say, no, I'll die on my sword. I will never, ever, ever compromise my art and try to make it more commercial. And I respect that. I absolutely respect that. But at the same time, isn't the whole point trying to reach as many people as you possibly can and make as much money as you can as a business, no? And I'm sure Tony Khan is a businessman. In other words, tomorrow, if Tony Khan knew our ratings will go up by 20% if we feature two fat sumo wrestlers bouncing each other's bellies back and forth, would Tony Khan say, well, that's going to be the feature match then? Or would he say, nope, we'll take less ratings and be true to what we're going to do here? I don't know the answer to that question. But that's the one they're going to have to ask themselves, Mike.
That really is, and that's the thing. And you look at, I would wager to say, you know, on the women's side, if let's say Rosemary came available, she'd be WWE bound, right away. Sue Young,
yep.
Same thing.
Yep.
You know, those type of people, you know, just like I think that there's no doubt in my mind that if all this stuff about Charlotte and all this copywriting of names and all that stuff is true, then she's making a plan to get out of the WWE at some point. And if she does, then it would make sense for AEW to sign her.
It would,
you know?
Yeah. No doubt. Because she's one who does have a lot of personality, and she's got a big name. And she can draw. I have no doubt that Charlotte draws. Becky Lynch draws. Charlotte draws. To an extent, I think Sasha even draws, and Bayley, to some extent. No, they're not going to. If you just have Sasha and Bayley and a bunch of jabronis, you're not going to fill 10,000 seats. But you are going to sell some based on that. Some people are going to say, I want to go see them. Yeah. Especially Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch could potentially, you know, fill an arena. Yeah, she could if it was a small one. I mean, if Becky Lynch came to a Civic Center and the feature match is Becky Lynch and, let's say, I don't know, Asuka, who isn't a big draw. But if Becky Lynch and Asuka was at a 2,500, 3,000-seat Civic Center and the rest of the matches are just like, you know, Ryder and Hawkins against the AT or the B team and mostly just, you know, people we don't know, they're probably still going to sell out because there's going to be a lot of people want to come see Becky Lynch. She's not going to fill Madison Square Garden like Bruno did in his heyday or Hogan did. Think about that. Think about the, you know, Hogan drew big. Bruno drew big. There's some people argue, say Hogan didn't draw that big. Yeah, Hogan drew big. And sold 10 ton of merchandise. But I promise you this. You put the New Day on a card somewhere, they're going to sell out. You put Bray Wyatt on the card, he's going to sell out. People want to see it. Wrestling is a carnival. Wrestling is like going into one of those funhouse horror rides or whatever the hell it is. Freak shows. And if it doesn't excite you, and captivate you and get your interest with the painting on the outside of the building where you say, ooh, I got to ride this ride. Ooh, I got to go in there. Then it doesn't matter how good the ride is. So that's what they've got to do. They've got to come off this indie mentality. The indies can't do it, folks. That's why I love indie wrestling. But the indies don't have the ability to do that. The indies don't know from week to week who's showing up sometimes because they're like, well, this guy's booked for this promotion or that promotion. So we just got to bring in guy A and guy B. And no, they're not feuding. No, there's no storyline. It's just two guys wrestling because we don't have no way to make storylines happen for the most part. Because we're not sure who's going to be here next time. So you're just going to have to deal with our mindset is we're going to put you on really good matches for you. We're going to bring in really good athletes and they're going to be really good matches. And that's fine. And that appeals to the indie crowd. And the indie crowd is not the majority of the wrestling crowd, though. So if you're a big indie crowd fan, yeah, AEW is going to look great. And it is great. But if you're that other type of fan, which the majority are, you need more. It's like my Metallica reference. If you're a heavy metal fan, you probably like Ride the Lightning better than, you know, a lot of the later Metallica stuff, but the later Metallica stuff was what made them the money and branched out into a big audience. And there's going to be a decent amount of heavy metal fans who say, I still like that though. I like Metallica overall. I did prefer their other stuff, but I still follow them. Only a few are going to drop off. So my point is, if AEW becomes a little more personality-oriented, and has a few more names like that. And okay, they're not five-star matches, but they're very interesting personalities. The guys who love the five-star matches aren't going to drop off. Kenny Omega's still there. The Bucks are still there. Cody Rhodes is still there. Hangman Page is still there. Pac is still there. They're going to give them that. They're going to give them that. So now let's let the other guys give the other section of the audience what they want, Mike, so it's not just a one-trick pony.
Right. And you look at these circus shot sideshows, you know, and you see, you know, the strong man and the lion tamer and the this and the that and the man with two heads and the bearded lady and all this stuff. You may not like it all, but there's something you're gonna that's going to draw you in that you're going to like. And that's what the WWE is. How many times have they changed? What's his name? Not Zack Ryder, but the other guy. Mr. I Got Kids. How many things have they given him to do? And he's done them, and he's done them, and he's got over at it. That's the sign of a good performer. That's a sign of a good. He's good in the ring. He's good on the mic, and whatever they give him, he can get it over. That's a triple threat right there.
Right, and my point is, look, you can give me Ricochet Buddy Murphy, and that's going to be a really, really, really good, solid match. But you can also give me Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin, and though it's not going to probably rise to the level of the Buddy Murphy Ricochet match, fans are going to be more interested in their characters. So you're giving him a little of everything. You're not saying no, you're eating a steady diet of this one thing. And right now, AEW is feeding us mostly that one thing, Mike.
Right. I mean, the whole circus midway thing, you know. And that's the thing. This is a circus. This is, and when the WWE is going good, that's exactly what it is. There's something for everybody. And right now, it's with the WWE is hitting this, and that's what allowing somebody like an AEW to survive, because the WWE is so hit and miss right now. If the WWE was going hitting on all cylinders, you would have, you know, Beauty and the Man Beast, and you would have the B Team, and you would have everybody would be drawing somewhat. You know, there'll be people that would be drawn more than other people, but everybody would be drawn, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, we're going to see what they're doing. Anyway, we wanted to mention that on Sunday, we are going to have our year-end award show. We are going to have Wrestler of the Year. We are going to have Newcomer of the Year. We are going to have Match of the Year, Pay-Per-View of the Year. We are going to have the Worst of and the Best of. We're going to have about 15 categories, I believe. And we're all going to give our opinions on what they, what was our favorites and our least favorite things of the year. I do want to tell people ahead of time, we're not going to be doing the New Japan stuff. Okay. So if you want me to say every great pay-per-view and every great match was from New Japan, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. We already know if you like that style, that's always going to be the best. We're going to take it mostly from the mainstream here. We're going to take it from Impact, AEW, Ring of Honor, WWE. That's going to be our main focus, NXT. That's going to be our main focus. So it's no, we're not going to put New Japan in this and just let them run the entire awards because we want to follow a trend. It's not going to happen. So hopefully you'll join us for that, and hopefully you'll agree with some of our picks. And if you don't, you can always write us on the chat room or call us up and give us yours. So we'll see you Sunday with our award show. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.